Hey, writers, are you whispering to yourself that this might just be your year to make NaNoWriMo happen? Or maybe planning to do it again? Bet. Do yourself a favor and invest in Author Accelerator's Inside Outline Coaching now, so that you've got a structure to free you up to use those 30 days in November to write something that really works. It is no fun to quote-unquote win NaNoWriMo with 56,000 words and then realize 35,000 of them don't serve your story at all. Trust me, I speak from experience. The Inside Outline really works. Find out more at authoraccelerator.com/insideoutline.
Is it recording?
Now it's recording.
Yay!
Go ahead.
This is the part where I stare blankly at the microphone. I don't remember what I'm supposed to be doing.
All right, let's start over.
Awkward pause, and
I'm going to rustle some papers.
Okay.
Now 1, 2, 3. Okay.
Hey, I'm KJ Melantonia, and this is Hashtag Am Writing. Hashtag Am Writing is the podcast about writing all the things. Short things, long things, fictional things, non-fictional things, but please, non-fictional things pretending to be fictional. Well, anyway, just don't get that wrong, people, right? We need to clarify. Some things fiction, some things are nonfiction.
But it's we write them all.
Short, long. Yeah, we do. We write them all, except for the ones that you're not supposed to write. Because the ones where you say they're nonfiction, but they're really fiction. That's bad. All right. They can be short. They can be long. They can be proposals. They can be pitches. They can be essays. All the things, but most of all, hashtag Am Writing is the podcast about sitting down and getting the work done.
I'm Jess Leahy. I am the author of The Gift of Failure and a forthcoming book about preventing substance abuse in kids. And you can find my writing all over the place, the New York Times and the Washington Post. And actually, as this airs, over at a new publication called Airmail.
And I'm Serena Bowen, the author of 30-ish contemporary romance novels. You can find me at serenabowen.com.
And I am KJ Dell'Antonia, author of How to Be a Happier Parent and of the novel The Chicken Sisters, which will be available next summer. I'm also the former lead editor and writer for the Motherload blog at the New York Times, where I still write occasionally. And you can find my work, a little bit of it, at The New Yorker.
That's pretty. It's still really cool.
I
still can't get over that. It's just so cool. So what are we talking?
Just a reminder, just a shout out to everyone who's ever written once for something. There are no gatekeepers of what you say you do.
Right.
You can say, you can find my work in the New York Times if you have written once for the New York Times online. That counts. There are not rules. There is no one checking, and if you don't grab it and take hold of it, other people are. So take it and rock it, people.
The nice thing is once something like that's on your SIG file or your bio or your resume or your CV, no one can ever take it away from you.
That's right.
Yeah.
You like it.
So what are we talking about today?
Today's topic is fresh fall starts, productivity, the real new year, September, all the school supplies, which aren't school supplies because we're not in school, but you know what I mean.
Okay, well, you and Serena get to take the lead today because, frankly, fall stinks. Fall is horrible. Fall is my nemesis this year because my deadline falls. My book deadline is on October 10th. And so every single time someone mentions fall, I want to just go into a hole and disappear. So fall is bad this year.
So you don't have a sense like that of a renewed.
No.
Like, do you feel like you've sped up? Do you feel like you've got some renewed energy? Your house is empty.
No.
You know,
I feel like my deadline's getting here really fast. Yes, Serena.
Somebody needs.
Do you have to add?
Somebody needs a nap and a hug because fall is awesome.
No, I know it is. I love fall. I mean, I live in New England. I live in the epicenter of beautiful fallness. But as I was mentioning earlier, I have, for our listeners that have been listening for a while, we have these wonderful calendars that we love to keep. And we have this sticker system. And I love my stickers this month. They came from Robbie Bear and Matthew Swanson, some authors that I love. I got some beautiful stickers. stickers from them. And I have at the top of my calendar the words, the final stretch. And on every single day, I have days left to my deadline. And today, the day we are recording, I have 38 days left until my deadline. And so I'm in crazy countdown mode. And tomorrow I leave for a road trip for 2 days. So yeah, you people can be excited about fall all you want, but I'm just going to live in my state of dread and oppression. But can I say one? Well, I will say as a progress report, I did hand in the first 5 chapters of my book to my editor this past weekend, and I was so deliriously happy. I thought I could just do cartwheels. It was pretty great. So that was a big milestone for me. So I'm feeling really good.
Awesome.
We were really excited for
you. Yeah, I know. All right. You people talk about your fresh fall starts and I'm going to sit here and mope.
Okay. Okay. Well, I handed in my big revision, which was due theoretically September 1st, but I took a look at the calendar and went, okay, I'll just ask my editor. She probably doesn't really want this on Sunday of Labor Day weekend. And indeed, she did not. So I had a couple extra days, which I used. I didn't work that much over Labor Day, but I definitely worked them. So it was due Tuesday. So Monday, end of day, I waved bye-bye to my revision, and my editor reports, I love this, that she read it all in one sitting.
Wow.
That's fantastic. Yeah.
So she said she loves it, and you know, it's all good and it's all exciting, and I will have small revisions at some point during this month, but the real priority for me this month is going back to my next project.
Yay.
Codename Project Guru. So off I go.
It has Stickers. A code name. I love that.
It does. All my projects have code name. Of course, my next novel is called The Chicken Sisters, and the code name was Chicken. So they might not be super secret-y.
The code is easy to break, is what you're saying.
I think so. Serena, what's your priority this fall?
Well, I'm neck deep in deadlines as well, but I still feel that fall is absolutely a turning point in publishing for so many reasons. And it's not just us. Like, it's not just us and our love of, like, the discount bin at Staples and the new markers. It's really, publishing keeps a calendar that supports this whole fall is glorious bit. For example, my European publishers have been nowhere to be found all summer. So now I'm starting to see new covers and to hear new publication dates, and there's just more happening.
Yeah, there is no point in submitting anything to anyone in August for the most part. I think my agent, when we were submitting, not The Chicken Sisters, but my How to Be a Happier Parent, we actually, I feel like, targeted kind of the middle of August on the theory that people would be coming back and everyone else was going to submit in September. And I could be wrong. We might have just talked about that. I don't remember the details. But basically, nobody does anything in August. And what they do is kind of like trying to get ahead because they know September's going to be crazy.
Right. And from the writer's perspective, this is really the last push before the holidays. So you get this time when everybody's at their desk and you can get your questions answered. And you can also take a peek back at your goals for the current year from a moment where it's not over yet.
Right. Yeah, you have some time to sort of, to grab those goals and see if they're makeable or revise them into something makeable or see what you could do towards them so that next year you don't feel quite so like I didn't do that. All good. There is data, and I'm just going to get it wrong, but I think October is either October or March is the most productive month of the year because there's nothing in either of those months that gets in our way.
That makes sense. One of the interesting things about coming back from the summer for me is I submitted a couple of things over the summer with the understanding that the people were on hiatus. One was for a television show, actually. It was a pitch I sent for a television show, and knowing full well that those producers were not going to be back until after the Labor Day weekend. But I put it in their boxes and said, here it is. I know you're not back to work yet, but you know, it'll just be waiting for you when you get back. So there's been this lull, and now all of a sudden I'm also like, oh, wait a second, anytime I could get some emails about these things I submitted over the summer. It's kind of exciting.
Well, it's kind of an interesting question whether we should or shouldn't do that. Because right. on the one hand, you know, the thing that's been sitting in your inbox since August 20th is less appealing than the thing that drops into your inbox on September 5th. Maybe. Or maybe you feel like you need to get to it. Or maybe, yeah, I don't know.
I was working off of my thinking on this was there was some momentum behind my getting the ideas in. And I didn't want it to get lost in the hustle. Mm. And I wasn't sure exactly what time this person was going to be going back to sort of pitch meetings and stuff. And so I didn't want my ideas to not be there when those happened. And so for me, there was we had a little jocular email back and forth going, and I wanted to keep the momentum of that rather than let it get stale. That was my thinking anyway. Who knows? Who knows? We never know how this is all going to work. So,
Serena, do you lose like your voice artists and your cover art designers and your editors and stuff like that in August the same way that you know, publishing goes on hiatus?
You know, no. I would say that the digital crazy people like me work 24/7 without any predictable breaks, honestly. It's really only the traditional world that seems to disappear. Like, magazines are still having their summer Fridays in August. That part of it is all predictable, but no, like the people who hustle for themselves do not seem to be as seasonal.
Right. Well, it would make sense not to. I mean, if other people were going to take a break in August, you'd be good to be the person who wasn't.
Yeah. The other thing about what I do specifically is that there are some big summer events. Mm-hmm. And some elbow rubbing and deal making gets done surrounding those things. So I'm more likely to meet vendors and people who can affect my sales platform in the summertime. But that's just a weirdness of the way my little corner of the world works.
Right. Well, I feel like some of this is also just, like you were saying, it's mental. I think we're all conditioned to, we're back to school, whether you have kids or not, and certainly whether you go back to school or not. It feels like a good time for hunkering down and learning new things and putting words on the page and, it feels like there's a good block here. We go from September 1st to November 20th or something before your personal life starts. Which is kind of sad. I don't know. I'm like, well, why can't, I mean, we can do both. But anyway, it just feels like, oh, yeah, I've got lots of time without surprise obligations.
Well, those of us with children, it's really true. I mean, the whole shape of my day changes once everybody goes back to school.
Yeah. Yeah. And Jess gets out of that because she's got, you know, one child left at home and he is pretty darn independent.
Yeah.
I had four. One's in Spain now. Yay. But actually, he's perhaps more demanding in Spain than he was while he was here because he's kind of lonely and he keeps FaceTiming. He keeps FaceTiming me at exactly the hour that I had planned for. But I'm not complaining. He can FaceTime me as long as he wants. I'm just happy about it.
All right. So when you talk about fresh fall starts, what exactly are you thinking? Do you guys, do you do more goal setting when you go into the fall? Do you do, like, we were just talking about this in our home, actually. We do goal setting sort of once a season. And so we were just actually planning our family dinner because my oldest son's college is just about to start. And right now is a really good time for us to sort of talk about what we all have in mind for the next 3 months. And we like to talk about, you know, things we'd like to achieve, that sort of stuff. Do you do the same thing with your writing going into this new season?
Yeah, I definitely do. And honestly, I've been trying to find a better way. I spent part of the weekend looking at project management tools on the web, which of course sounds like a giant time sink, and it was. But I am having trouble planning long-term because there are so many interconnected deadlines with the way that I produce material, and I'm trying to find a tool to help me overcome this.
Like an Asana-like thing, only just for you?
Yeah, kind of like that. I'm always having to count backwards. So if I look at next year and I'm like, you know, May is a good month to publish because all the primaries are over and we haven't hit the summer doldrums yet. So I definitely want to have a book coming out in May. And then this is where it gets fun. So 6 weeks before I want that book to come out, I have to hand it off to an editor. So I have to hire that person, and I have to hire that person at least 6 weeks before that moment. So then I'm like, okay, six and six is 12. So like, so all the math begins, and then I have to hand it to audio narrators edited 4 weeks before it comes out, but I have to hire those audio narrators 60 days before that. So it's all these interconnected deadlines that I'm having trouble tracking in my life, and that's a big challenge going forward.
Right. And I am definitely re-looking at deadlines and goals. And some of that is the sort of renewed fall energy, and some of it is renewed fall time. And some of it is also, okay, so I too have a book coming out in May or June. I don't actually know the exact date yet. I'm going to guess like the very first week of June. Plus my paperback is kind of going to come out. So
oh,
I was just
right.
looking
I totally
at,
forgot about paperback.
Right. So I was just looking at my website and my my follow KJ links and my Twitter, sort of the headers on everything and everything, and thinking, well, I'm gonna have to change those. They should reflect the new book, but there's also the paperback, and they're pretty kind of different readership anyway. So yeah, it's another one of those things. I'm not gonna be able to look at that in May and go, oh, I think I'll just fix all of it. So yeah, I was doing some counting backwards too. So some of it is, what do I want to have done when, counting backwards, and some of it is, what do I want to achieve now, and sort of, you know, setting a goal to go forwards. And because I also want to have another, my goal is to have my new project fully drafted by the end of October.
That is big.
That is a big goal. Wow.
How are you doing on that?
Well, it's about half drafted. It's about half drafted, honestly.
Okay.
So it's a highly doable, I mean, you know, I don't plan to have it polished, but I'd like to have it, well, actually, I kind of like to have it agent worthy by then, but I don't know. Yeah, I can do it.
You can do it. You can do it.
I can do it. Waving my fist in a power salute.
Right.
I can do it.
And then when you have a project at a publishing house, that becomes a little bit of a whack-a-mole game, because one of these days someone is going to turn up with copy edits for you.
Right. Yeah. Yep.
That's the thing about this fall that I was thinking about. So my editor happens to be really fast. In fact, so much so that when my agent and I were talking about deadlines for the book, I said, look, I have this week. I think I mentioned it before. I'm really lucky in that every 6 months I do a presentation at Canyon Ranch. And so I'll be there actually for a whole week starting the day after my book deadline. And originally we had put a cushion in between my book deadline and going off to Canyon Ranch. And our agent said, you know, Gail is so fast with edits that you may want to literally make it the next day. So there's no possibility you have edits back from her, so you can actually enjoy that week. But I'm figuring that, you know, my entire after the deadline, pretty much right away, I'm going to start getting edits. I am going to start.
But you did take that week, right? You
did. I did, yes.
Give yourself.
I'm protecting that week. And I also know, starting the day after, what next thing I want to start writing. So I will go off to Canyon Ranch having some pleasure writing in mind. So I may not do it. I don't know. We'll see. But I'm definitely taking lots of books because, oh my gosh, I have a stack of books that I haven't been able to read because I've been working so much. So I'm excited for that. But edit is, and that, the other thing that was kind of cool is I realized when I sent those chapters off to my editor that suddenly now she's going to have thoughts about possible cover designs, even though the pub date is still way away. But obviously, all of a sudden, I'm like, oh, wait, I get to start thinking about some of the really fun parts of this process through this slog, which is going to be really fun.
That is very nice.
I can't even imagine what the cover is going to look like for this book. It's kind of exciting to think about, though.
Cool.
Speaking of covers, Serena, you sent us some covers the other day, and it was interesting to me just to see in different countries how differently people think about your work. It's always been interesting to me because, like, for example, your German covers are absolutely gorgeous for your Ivy Years books. And then for another series, they go in a whole other direction. Then you look at a whole other country and you realize, wow, they have a very different sort of aesthetic about your books. It's fascinating to me to see your covers in different countries. And mine too. I mean, some of mine make no sense. My Korean cover has deer all over it. I don't know what that's about, but apparently it appeals to some aesthetic that it's very pretty. I just don't know what it has to do with failure, but I'm happy it's pretty, but I don't know what it's appealing to on some sort of cultural level.
Right. Well, first of all, there's nothing more fun than looking at foreign cover art.
Oh, no.
Because no. The work is already done, right? You wrote that book like 3 years ago, and any book, and now you just get to see somebody else interpret it.
Right.
And the German romance market has no bare chests at all, which means all their cover art is super classy and really cool. So yeah, that's a really good time.
So you're saying just as an aesthetic, no romance covers in Germany do that? So the whole Fabio, you know, on the cover is just isn't a thing they do?
Well, not currently. I mean, there could be some, you know, past moment in German mm-hmm. romance that looked different, but it's lots of flowers and pastels. And so in this country, I would never publish a romance that didn't have some human element on it. Like, even if it was a hand or the corner of a smile or something. Like, to me, you need a person somewhere represented on there, or people are not going to know what that book is about. So, but in Germany, they don't have that restraint. And so it's really hard for me to look at German cover art and make sense of it, because I just have to trust that they know what they're doing. And that's how I ended up with flowers all over the Ivy Years. And I thought, well, where's the ivy? And it turns out not to matter, because they did amazing things with those covers. And I'm still seeing them on Instagram, you know, a year and a half later.
That's the thing that also has been so cool about seeing what romance authors and readers do with Instagram and covers. It's like, I had no idea. It's this whole culture of, like, set design to honor books that you love or series that you love. It's amazing to me what shows up on your Instagram feed from readers and other authors.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah. I kind of wish that was happening in, you know, nonfiction and, you know, sort of literary fiction. It would be so cool. Although I will say that some people have done some very cool things with Gift of Failure, but never to the level that I see with the romance on
you. Just not quite the same.
Not quite the same thing.
Let us know when someone tattoos a line from it on them.
Yeah.
That could happen.
Yeah, I'm sure that's going
to
happen.
It could happen. It totally could. It occurs to me that, I mean, it actually kind of makes sense.
What's really cute is I get videos from people of their kids doing things and being proud of themselves. I get those all the time. I love them so much.
That is very cute. Yeah. Well, so my stickers for fall look like little typewriters because you gave them to me, Serena. Aww. Thank you. They each say hello. I've been looking forward to using them. And then I made my September spread, you know, my chart, and I was all ready to go, and I was like, where are my typewriter stickers? And there ensued a flurry of wild searching, but I use a basket to carry my laptop and other bits of my work from place to place in the house, because that's just how I do it, and they were in there. So.
Excellent.
Found. Yay. It was a crisis, though, let me tell you.
Serena, Serena, when is your next release date? Are you gearing up for any release dates?
October 29, I believe.
It's so crazy. It happens so fast that, you know, I was realizing when you introduced yourself as the author of over 30 novels or whatever, you know, just you were on recently and talking about 24. So it just goes fast. It's so impressive. It's so amazing.
I think she just picks a number.
I think she does. She's making it
up. I mean,
up.
Of books that you have legitimately done. But, you know, it would get boring if every time it was 31.
But you're right
over 30.
I don't keep track all that carefully.
Couple dozen.
you know, the Romance Writers of America keeps track of this stuff. They will have a milestone for you. Like, if I submit that that was my 30th book or whatever, they'll send me a little pin.
Really?
Yes.
That's so supportive and amazing.
I was thinking they should send you a stone. Like an actual little rock with the number 30 on it. It's your milestone.
Aww.
I don't know why I had that thought. I guess that would be expensive shipping.
I guess so.
Does anyone have any actual tips? Can we give some actual practical tips? Does anyone have any actual wonderful tips aside from starting a new page on the calendar, which is always exciting, and, you know, doing all the picking of the stickers and picking a new page? But do you guys have any sort of ideas for ways to think about fall as a fresh new start and to give yourself a break and let go of some of the, maybe if the last thing you submitted didn't go very well, how you wrap your brains around a fresh start?
I really like to look at this as the last lap. And so it's fun to look back at my 2019 goals and also start to pencil in the 2020 goals, because it's not so scary to do that right now. So while I'm trying to finish up this year on a strong note, I have definitely started in the margins just doodling the goals for next year, because it's not here yet. And I feel like I have room in my brain to think about that from a place of less pressure. And so I start every morning with my planner open to look at what I'm doing for the day before I look in that dreadful email inbox to see what might be there for me. And I just try to get a grip on the new day before it takes over.
And I'm looking at every day and finding the block for words, which also kind of looks like assigning blocks. So for various reasons, I brilliantly sort of looked at this the first week with people back at school and decided to put a lot of appointments in it, like the people coming to pick up the furniture that's getting donated to Habitat for Humanity, and the this and the that. And so, you know, I very stupidly broke up my own days in ways that were a little hard to manage. So what I've been doing is looking ahead at each. On Friday, I try to look at the week ahead, mark off the blocks that I have sucked away for other things, and also make a mental note to myself to stop doing that. And then make sure that the days have a space that is dedicated to doing the thing that I most want to do, and then a space that is dedicated to doing the things that I have to do, and sort of trying to make those realistic so that I don't start this great time of year feeling like I need to beat myself up because I didn't. As we all agreed, this is not the week for me to make 1,200 words a day my goal. Maybe next week, but not this week. This week, I kept the writing goals a little smaller because I've got a couple days where I really have just smashed myself down into teeny tiny little pockets. So I think looking at the time you have and making choices about how you're going to use it instead of going, oh, it's one, this is my 2 hours, what am I going to do, is really key.
Well, this might be a good time to mention that all of a sudden, the three of us in particular, but mostly you, have been working on a new project. There's a new time allocation thing that is coming into play for the three of us. KJ,
yes.
would you like to talk about our new project?
Oh, yeah. I'm so excited about this. So members of our Facebook group already know that we've launched the hashtag AmWriting weekly show notes email and the hashtag AmWriting supporters top five emails.
What do you mean by that?
I'm really excited. Oh, yeah, I'm really excited about this. So I'm going to lay it out. So you can go to amwritingpodcast.com and you can sign up to, every week when we drop a new episode, you can get the show notes, you can get a transcript, you can get the audio of the episode in your inbox. So every time we have a new episode, you'll know what it is. You'll know what it's about. It's right there if you want to play it from there. Now, that doesn't change anything in terms of, like, we're still going to pop up in iTunes or Outcast or or Stitcher or wherever you get your podcasts. We are still there. But this way you can, you know, you can get a little notification. You can get the links. You can get any images. For example, last week, yeah, we did our Burn Chart episode. So the show notes had pictures. And those pictures were in the show notes email. So that was exciting.
It's also been super fun to watch people's reaction to getting that stuff too. It's anyway, keep going. Sorry, I'm just
excited.
Yeah,
it was fun. So, no, that's okay. No, I'm really excited. So the other thing that we have done is we know that a ton of listeners want to support the podcast. And if you go to amwriting.com, you can, and sort of poke around a little, you'll find a lovely video of just Jess and I talking about how much we have invested in the podcast so far. And we've mentioned it a couple of times.
Do you want to say the number? No matter how it's
God,
pretty
it's
horrible.
So painful. Yeah. Yeah. So before we got our sponsor, it didn't feel like it was this much at the time, but somehow or another, we managed to spend $10,000 between us.
That doesn't even count, like, you know, buying like microphones and our time and all that stuff. That's just like what we've spent on our producer.
That's producing and kind of making the web. Really, it's just producing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
$10,000. Okay. So, right there. $10,000.
Yeah. Ouch. Ouch, ouch, ouch. People have mentioned that they would love to support the podcast financially, but we didn't want to just do that. We didn't want to just be like, okay, well, fine, you know, send us a check or you know, however you want to do it. We wanted to give something to people that want to support the podcast. So Serena and I sat down and came up with the idea of the Writer's Top 5. So what we're doing is every week we are sending out to our supporters a top 5. So for example, right now you can find top 5 questions you should ask your novel's main character. You can find top 5 reasons you should have a burn chart. I think this week's supporter only email is... and it'll come out, they come out on Monday. So next Monday is going to be top 5 steps to burn chart success. So that's the how to. And that's going to be supporter only. And I don't know what comes next, but I know we've got, you know, top 5 things you can do on Goodreads coming up, top 5 things you need for your Instagram toolkit, top 5 ways to prep for NaNoWriMo, all kinds of stuff. Serena, do you remember? Name some good ones.
Oh, well, they're all super prescriptive, which was really important to me, because when I listen to the amazing interviews you guys do, I'm always taken somewhere on a writer's journey that's not my journey, which is always really illustrative. And I love to sit back and listen to the amazing guests that you find to take me somewhere where I'm not going myself. So that's why the top 5 things are meant to be things that many, if not all, of our listeners can put into action immediately. So it's the, like, it's the, this is for you to act on right now. And that's what we're going to deliver.
The stuff I've been working on lately has been things like, I have a couple in progress on top 5 organizational strategies before you ever start researching that nonfiction book, or top 5, tips for keeping your research organized while you're working on the project. A lot of sort of mistakes I've made and have come up with solutions that work for me. And that's been, you know, it's also been, I'm in this position right now of having already made the mistakes and fixing them on this second book. And that's been really fun to see. I'm like, oh, that's a place at which I would have lost this altogether if I hadn't come up with a way to fix it this time around. So yeah, mine have all been very practical around organization and nonfiction writing.
And most of them are both fun and actionable, but we will be letting Jess do top 5 things you can do to prep for taxes.
Oh, yes, Jess. Actually, Serena, now that we have Serena on board all the time, Serena's got perspectives on, you know, self-publishing. Like we had talked at one point about top 5 things to do before, if you're going to take on a pseudonym, top 5 things to do before you hit publish on that, you know, self-published novel, that kind of thing.
Absolutely.
Yes. So we could basically riff all day on top 5s, and basically we will.
Exactly.
So So we're excited. So the thing to do, if you want to either get the weekly show notes email or sign up to support us, is to go to amwritingpodcast.com. And this is all via the people at Substack. So if you happen to remember the episode with Liz Lenz about how she supports herself on Substack, we're now using Substack both to produce the podcast and to create, to send out our show notes and to create our top fives. Oh, and starting in November, we're going to do some supporter-only teeny-weeny bonus audio episodes of some kind. And the cool thing that Substack has brought off that I haven't found anywhere else is that if you're a supporter and we start doing the audio thing, we send you one email, you click that link. That link opens your podcast app no matter what it is. And I have tried this on Outcast, which is not one of the most popular podcast apps by any means. I mean, I guess it's one of like the top 10. And it just popped up and there I was subscribed to this supporter-only podcast and then it just fed. I never had to do anything else. Whereas there are some other platforms where every time one of the people that I love puts out an audio, a supporter-only audio episode, I can only listen to it on my phone, which is frustrating because where we live, that is not a successful. It's great for about the first half mile. So if you want to support the podcast, you can sign up to support us for $7 a month or $80 a year. And you can also always get the show notes, the transcript, the links for free like they've always been. And the audio of the hashtag #AmWritingPodcast every week. Gonna stay free. We started it this way. We're keeping going this way. We love doing it, but we would also love to have anybody's support that's game to join the team.
Yay!
Yay!
Do we want to talk about what we've been reading?
We do.
Sure. Excellent.
What I have been reading is relevant to our topic. Can I start?
Yeah, of course.
Because I haven't talked enough. I decided to reread Laura Vanderkam's Off the Clock.
Oh, nicely done.
Laura's writing, and Laura was a guest on the podcast at some point, and I'll look that up and pop it into the show notes. Laura's writing about time. She would say time management, but it's really about time, has changed my, it changed my life in many ways. And Off the Clock is one of my favorites, and I decided to reread it. And as a result of sitting down and rereading Off the Clock, I did a couple of things. I started blocking off time to make sure that I was spending it with friends, because one of my favorite quotes from Laura is, people are a good use of time. I say that to myself all the time. People are the best use of time. When I talked earlier about making sure that I plan the way that I'm going to use my blocks of time instead of just getting to them and figuring out what I want to do, that is also down to Laura. And I just, as I read through, there are just all kinds of moments when I'm reminded that the way that I talk about to myself about my time and the way that I choose to use my time is going to affect how I feel at the end of the day so much that I've sort of flailed on this sentence. But anyway, it's a great book. It's always a good read and highly, highly recommend.
She's always a good reread too, because I get different things depending on where I am in my headspace every time I reread her stuff. So for me lately, the equivalent of that is every single morning, no matter how stressed I feel about this deadline, I wake up and I try to remind myself that, oh my gosh, I cannot believe I get to do this for my work. This, I just feel so lucky. And so that helps me sort of make the most of what I get to do for a living. It's really good. So, Serena, what have you been reading?
The only thing I've been reading right now is a book called Take Off Your Pants. And that refers to being a pantser versus being a plotter in fiction.
All right, you're going to have to do a recap. I know we talked about it one time on another episode, but we definitely need to know more about that.
Okay, plotting versus seat of the pants.
Right.
And her title, Take Off Your Pants, is tongue-in-cheek to turn people into plotters. So the book is by Libby Hawker, and she approaches plotting a book before you write it from a character perspective instead of exactly like the beats or the three-act, five-act structure that often plot gurus talk about. And I just liked her approach a lot because it feels like something that can apply to what I do a little better. Often when I read books about how to plot a novel, they are all assuming that I'm writing some kind of epic Star Wars thing with, you know, life and death and,
tend to have a really masculine gestalt. And by, I don't mean that like Star Wars is anything but for men, but the whole sort of spreadsheet plotting and hero's journey plotting tends to lean towards the action-driven story.
Yes. Like, if you're trying to write a sweeping epic fantasy, those books are usually more applicable. And I find that this character-based plot structure that she starts with speaks to me in a way that some other books have not.
Cool.
Does this mean you're going to change? Are you going from being a pantser to a plotter?
Oh, Serena is so not a pantser.
I know, I was joking. She's the opposite of a pantser, and that's why we love her so much.
Yeah,
you've been pantsing this ending that you've been working on a little bit.
Yeah, that's the thing. I used to think of myself as a plotter until I worked with some people who really plot in a serious way. And then I started to see all of the squishiness in my approach. And not that it's terrible, it's just that it's lovely when you can learn the vocabulary for the things that you're doing, because it gives you a way to think about them a little more deeply. And so that's what I'm trying to do.
I like overlaying some of that on top of what I've already, when I did the revision of the cheat sheet, of the Chicken Sisters, I put a beat sheet over it. I had never done a beat sheet for it, which is the Save the Cat. Save the Cat writes a novel
right
thing. I have done the inside outline, which is very similar, and I redid my inside outline. And I created a beat sheet, which I had never done. And that really helped me because I was trying to trim. And when you have the beat sheet, you are forced to recognize what the priorities are and sort of, you know, give those more space. So I like putting this stuff over what I've already written, as well as using it to write new stuff.
Yeah, that tends to just stress me out.
Okay, don't do that then.
All right, I have...
Jess,
I
reading have, anything?
Yes, in fact, I held this back from you. I was going to email you about it, and I decided to hold it for the podcast because I thought you might think it's delightful. So I think I got... this was on Chirp, and chirp.com is the sort of... it's like audiobooks on sale sort of feed. So... Chirp.com.
It's BookBub.
Yeah.
It's BookBub's.
That's right.
Audio.
Right. So yeah. I get an email once a week or so, maybe more often than that, saying what's on sale for audiobooks. And so this one sounded cute and I downloaded it. And the voice sounded really familiar of the narrator. I didn't know anything about this book. I decided to just go blind. And the book is called Holding, H-O-L-D-I-N-G. And I don't even remember why I picked it, which is why I thought it would be kind of fun to just go into it blind. Turns out this novel is written by Graham Norton. Graham Norton is very famous in the UK for the Graham Norton Show, which is delightful. But I had no idea he ever wrote a book, and it turns out he's written a bunch of them. So this was completely new to me, and it is something you would really like, KJ. It is a little village-oriented mystery with really quirky Irish characters and what Graham Norton does really well is really funny depictions of very quaint sort of Irish village characters. They're just like these, everyone has their own little backstory and their own little quirks. And yes, there is the overlay of a mystery, but more than anything, it's sort of that thing you love, that small village.
Right.
Yeah.
That sounds right up my alley. Although Holding is in my history as a criminal prosecutor,
exactly.
Really typically means you're holding. Like
the word,
you've got some.
The word has multiple meanings here. Holding can also be a property word, but it has of different meanings in this book.
Oh, I'm excited.
Yeah, you're going to love it. And I actually, I was listening to some of it just to relax before I went to bed, and I giggled a whole bunch of times. And Tim was like, okay, you got to listen to something else because I was giggling in bed at night. And I was just delighted. You're going to love it.
Okay, this is just what I need good. For my soothing fall read.
Good.
Thank you. It's like you've given me a little gift.
Good. I'm so glad. Who wants to do our bookstore?
Our bookstore. You do the bookstore.
Me? I get to do the bookstore? Yeah. Well, this bookstore was a scene of an interesting crime for me. So we are going to shout out a bookstore that all three of us really love called Bear Pond Books in Montpelier, Vermont. I went to this bookstore the day that The Gift of Failure came out. And it's what put the nail in the coffin of impressing my son, because they didn't have my book and we hadn't been able to find it a couple of other places. And my son said to me, Are you sure that this book comes out today? And it turns out that there had been a supply issue and blah, blah, blah. And it was still in some boxes and da, da, da. But Bear Pond Books is this great bookstore in Montpelier. It's one of those really classic, you know, squeaky wood floor bookstores that's well curated, really approachable. It's right at the main intersection in Montpelier, really easy to find. And I believe you sent me a picture of my book in the window there with your kids waving from outside the window.
I believe that was one of the many such pictures that I have sent you.
Yep.
You are 100% right.
Yep.
And I want to add that that happened to me too, not at Bear Pond Books, but I went somewhere the day that my book came out with my oldest son, and the book was not there. But fortunately, I had already impressed him by being on the Today Show. So.
Oh, that's good. It takes a lot.
I'd clenched that one.
It takes a lot to impress our children. I made some joke about, you know, when my ranking was high at Amazon, I made some joke about, like, you know, that's above, like, the Bible and stuff. And my son was like, yeah, but you buy one Bible and then you're kind of done for your whole life. So, yeah, no matter what you say to your children, you're never, ever impressive. So, yeah. All right. I think we are done for the day because we ran long. But and thank you.
Wait.
Yeah. What? Sorry.
I don't know. Before we sign off, I just want to remind everybody that if you'd like to support the podcast, you can go to amwritingpodcast.com. And another way to support us, and getting our email is great. We would love to send you the email with the show notes and the transcript because we're making it. It'd be great if people make use of it. You can also support the podcast by leaving us a review on iTunes or Stitcher or wherever you listen to podcast and can review it, or just by telling one friend that this is a podcast that they would love.
That's a great idea. And you also mentioned that the people in our hashtag AmWriting Facebook group were some of the first people to find out about our Substack project. And so if you're interested in joining that group on Facebook, please do, because we talk about, you know, topics we might want to come up with on the podcast. We talk about things that are happening in our lives. And it's just a really great place for writers to support each other. And there are no meanies there because we can filter the comments.
No meanies. That's right.
So... thank you so much, everyone, for listening. And until next week, keep your butt in the chair and your head in the game. This episode of Hashtag AmWriting with Jess and KJ was produced by Andrew Perella. Our music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and performed by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their services because everyone, even creatives, should be paid for their work.